Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But we're streaming not only on the Odyssey app, you can also stream us on the TuneIn Radio app as well as the iHeart Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to all Football Friday. My company sitting in. He's going to start hanging out with us on Fridays. He, of course, is the Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Hear him every weekday on Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Follow him on Twitter on X at DeMichael C. DeMichael, good day, sir.
Good day. Good day. Happy Friday, fellas.
DeMichael is, of course, a Packers fan, so we will discuss last night's game before we take a look ahead at the biggest games of the weekend and determine what we're going to be talking about on Monday. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get more into all the big games as well as the NFL slate during hour number two. We'll have Marshawn Lattimore tell his story, and it was delicious.
It's a cornerback story, I tell you.
Chef's kiss.
It's one that you give a fist pump as soon as you hear it. Like, you're like, that's what I want my corners to be.
Yep.
Like, it's like, I told George when Malik on Wednesday was trying to spin zone his bad attitude is that sometimes that's just how he fires his guys up. That's my number one receiver.
Yeah, I got to smile more.
Right. I don't want my number one receiver to be a team guy. I want that guy to be
give me
first.
The ball, yeah.
Yeah, that's a me first guy. That's what that position calls for. So we'll get into more of that during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I think let's start with last night, DeMichael.
Yeah.
So I felt like this summer you had quiet hopes for the Packers.
For sure. That's a good way to put it.
I don't know how after 2 weeks you can't be thinking like, oh, my God, we might be the best.
It's hard. I mean, that move to get Micah Parsons has completely, this was already a really good defense, right? Like last season, they were very solid. And, you know, you had Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, and these guys and all that. But, I mean, we just talked about it. Like, it is amazing to me. Like, I've seen Micah Parsons talk about it in the past. He said, I've never not played with an all-pro corner. Basically saying, you know, he turns guys into all-pros. And
love
I'm
it.
Like,
love it.
I'm like, yeah, we got Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine. But I just watched Keyshawn Nixon yesterday because all he has to do, you watch, he had five PBUs.
Yep.
It was more than any corner last season in any game. And each of the five PBUs, he's basically like, he's squatting down on receivers. He's not afraid of anyone beating him deep because he knows that there's not going to be a lot of time for these guys to even go deep. Like, in the first two games, that's all it's been against Green Bay. Like, it's just a bunch of short passes. They're getting there quick. And then the other guys around Micah, like, they always say those top premier pass rushers make everyone else better. And, I mean, I've always felt Devontae Wyatt since Georgia. Like,
yeah.
I've just always felt that he's a
freak. It's usually a safe bet. Like, hey, we need a defensive lineman. It's like, is there a Georgia guy?
Yep.
It's like, it's usually not a bad pick.
That's the Eagles' way.
Well, I mean, and it's like, it's just so, no, it's like when Jalen Carter was falling, and I was like, you could just see it
you
happen.
You felt it coming.
In the draft, you're like, they're going to take him, he's going to be awesome, and it's just going to suck. And then they trade up, and they get him, they take him, and he's awesome. And it has just sucked. But I think the other thing that I noticed last night, the only difference having watched Sunday's game against the Lions and last night's game against the Commanders was Jaden was in the shotgun more, and they never tried to run the ball. But it's like the game script felt the exact same. Like I felt like the halftime score was the same. It was like they've played two consecutive games, and you just felt like the only thing that was different was the jersey colors.
Yeah. I mean, it's just defense is just completely erasing. I mean, Jeff Hafley is this is an interesting one to me. If you really want to get into it, but he's a very creative guy. I feel like in that first game they played a lot more man, and then in this game they played a lot more zone, which
I think it was just simply right. Like you don't want to have your I feel like a disaster scenario is when your DBs turn their back to Jaden.
He's gonna run.
Correct. And I think with like last night, it's like, all right, well, we're not gonna do that. Because the other thing that stood out, I was telling them this before the show. You didn't really see guys open down the field, but like if Jaden did try to get to his check down early and it felt like a guy was in space, from the TV copy, it felt like you just saw like a missile coming in. And
every time
the linebackers are so fast.
They've built that team like a track team. And I think
they're
physical.
It's not just fast, though. It's like they're physical, too.
Yeah. Like, it's a bunch of SEC dudes. It's speed. It's big dudes. It's dudes with good RAS scores, like, in the combine. Like, guys running four fives, getting downhill. They're thumpers.
They're trait guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of trait guys. And, I mean, when you build a defense like that, and then you get the skill on top of it, it's...
No, I mean, again, it's week two, and all right, well, get me to January. Who's going to be the healthiest, whatnot, but it's, I don't know. To me, it's like, because I wasn't quite sure on Sunday. I don't worry about the Lions having to replace coordinators. I do worry about them having to replace
the
their
two
offensive linemen
were 100%, awesome. 100%.
But I was kind of like, I was like, what if the Lions just aren't that good?
Yeah.
And then watching last night, This
ain't a Lions problem.
Yeah, I was like, I think they might make you look bad.
Yeah, because they were like I said, they were a solid defense last year.
I think I might have to like hammer the Lions on Sunday.
It would probably be smart. It would be smart.
I think the Packers are going to do that to a lot of people. Like I don't know. I guess the only hangup I have, and I know his numbers were good.
Yeah.
I still quite don't know why I don't trust Jordan Love. But I don't know why.
I couldn't tell you
why. He didn't make a bunch. Like, he does. I guess it's because he does, like.
He pushes the ball more than anyone in the league.
It's a lot of YOLO stuff.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, man.
But how YOLO is it if he's not turning it over?
Well, I mean, like, last night, it's like, okay, yeah, it's YOLO, but it's like guys one-on-one deep down the field. And then they also did the other thing where it's like every receiver they have, like, set a combine record.
Yeah.
And it's just, God, they're just so fast. All right, that's enough glazing of the Packers, but I did think they were absolutely I just found myself going like, this team's scary.
I saw they jumped the Eagles as the favorites. I wouldn't go, even as a Packers fan, I'm not ready to say that just yet, but they jumped the Eagles as the favorites, NFC.
I was also thinking about it like this. It's like, okay, if they played next week, I still think in the end, it's like, all right, if you made it a pick 'em, who would I bet? I'd still bet the Eagles.
And I point out the fact that who do you think in the playoffs last season, who was the Eagles' toughest opponent to you?
I thought it was the Rams.
I thought it was the Packers.
I do think it was harder for the Eagles to move the ball on the Packers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I felt like I never quite trusted
like
the Packers
offense.
Were gonna, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I did think like Stafford hit some throws.
He did, yeah.
And then the game, like when the snow, but no, I'm fine. If it was definitively harder for them to move the ball in the Packers than it was anyone else.
For sure.
Totally agree with
you. For sure. And that's why I say it comes down to the Packers offense this year. And I think getting Matthew Golden, who didn't even have a catch like in this game. I
mean, no, but he did have a highlight. Oh my God, look how fast he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the deep throw.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to this weekend because, I mean, it's a delicious weekend in terms of the college games. So let's start
I love this weekend.
We'll start with your alma mater.
Yep, let's
go. You can hear it right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, 2:30. Mike Keith, all-time great dude. Yep. As a key reminder, they keep saying 2:30. These ABC 2:30 games are kicking off at 2:57. Like, I don't know why we're bothering saying, like, at least just, like, say 2:45.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even close. I am willing to accept I'm just wrong, but I'm also going to do the move where I'm going to need to pay to see it. Why do we think this year would be any different than every other version of when we've seen Heupel's offense go against Kirby's defense?
I got to start with the fact that I think Aguilar is going to push the ball much better than Nico ever did.
I think through two starts, you can say that definitively.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not afraid to let it rip.
You got to try to push the ball against Georgia. I think when you allow Georgia players to sit in the way that, you know, because at the end of the day, Kirby's defenses are kind of predicated on not giving up those big plays.
No explosives.
Yeah, no explosive plays.
When they play, I was looking it up on True Media.
Yeah.
The last, like, 3 years, it's been, like, 75% quarters or cover three.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Everything's do not let anything over your head.
But that doesn't mean just, oh, all right, we're just going to dump it down.
Correct.
The athletes are too good.
Well, it's also like, why would you want to play more plays against their defense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the longer their defense goes, the more they're going to get you.
And Tennessee's defense should keep them in this game.
Okay. I agree. I would like to know this. Are the injuries now starting to become a thing?
It's a problem to me because two of your biggest injuries for this game, you know, you're talking about right tackle, you're talking about an interior nose tackle, defense lineman. You got to play Georgia close to even in the trenches. We know Tennessee's going to they want to get the ball outside the numbers and things like that, but Georgia, you talk about the success that they've had against the Heupel, you know, offenses. It's been bully ball to me.
Yes, it's like their front four is just dominating.
They just bully them. And I feel like Tennessee's just got to play them close to even in the trenches. If you play them even in the trenches, you can create, like, I think the running game is fine. Running game's all right, but I mean you're not going to be able to just run the ball down Georgia's throat pretty much probably, but I think they'll have some opportunities there. You set up the play action. No, Heupel takes shots. I don't think that
he certainly calls them.
Yeah,
he's not afraid. He's not afraid to call a shot.
Aguilar is much better built for that than Nico was. Nico missed a lot of big time throws. I felt like over the last season, like in.
Yeah, I never knew how much was. Like, I know Tennessee fans feel a certain way about Nico. I'm not even saying.
You've seen the UCLA stuff.
But see, like, okay, same thing. So this is a perfect example.
Yeah.
He's getting hit
44%
of the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like,
true.
At UCLA, it's kind of a no-chance thing. The problem that I had with it, Tennessee, was, yeah, he clearly would miss throws. I also never really saw, like, a receiver that I'm like, that guy scares me. Mm. Like, Squirrel, I thought, was a good player, but, like, I wouldn't sit there and go, if I'm in the defensive meeting, I'm not saying, like, we have to
take Squirrel away. Yeah.
So have the receivers gotten better? Because that is like
– they got some guys with good physical traits, right? Chris Razzle. Mike Matthews is he's what you want a receiver to look like.
I do think they looked faster the last couple of weeks, but I also didn't – that was the other problem I struggled with. It's like, I don't think Syracuse is good. I want to be very clear. I bet Tennessee.
I didn't either. Yeah, it was whatever.
To me, it's like two things can be true. Like, I don't think Syracuse is good, but like that, I don't know why everyone like always takes that as like somehow like that's like demeaning to Tennessee. It's like, well, no, it's like
Tennessee didn't make them look good either.
Correct. So, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, and that I never really considered that Syracuse had a chance in that game.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not saying that, but I just kind of get the sense that, like, I mean, this is where I could be wrong. Like,
how do you feel about Gunner?
So that's what I told George. What is annoying about this week is I feel like this week has been defined for me by I've been forced to back teams and players that I don't actually
trust.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I was lower on Georgia coming into the year because I don't think he's good. And I think Georgia fans have done the things that a lot of like fans do where it's like a guy leaves and you're like, don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going like, did you watch
you
what
better,
happened
you better
when
be careful with, when the, be careful what you wish for.
When he left and then the other guy played.
It wasn't pretty.
No. He loves his dogs. He's got a pickup. Like, I don't care. Like I think part of the reason why Miami to me is like legitimately title good is because
Carson Beck.
Their offensive defensive lines are awesome and he's good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that the Tony kid. Oh my God.
Malachi.
Yeah. What is up with why are we having so many 17-year-olds that can go
just
on to
come
these
in and just
like, what, how?
That kid is ridiculous. It's, and it's everything, too.
7-on-7.
Twitchy,
shout out to the
twitchy, fast, runs good routes.
7-on-7 football's taking
full
over.
Full package.
It's that Notre Dame nickel. God, I was like, I bet that guy's
skates.
I think like the one good thing you could say to that guy is like, well, you're probably not going to see him again. Like, it's only going to get easier. It's like only going to get easier from this year. Like, you don't have to cover that. But I guess like if I'm trying to come up with the how could I be wrong, I think you're right. You have to play even with Georgia. Because like if I think about like the Georgia losses last year,
mm-hmm.
Ole Miss actually outplayed them up front.
They did.
Alabama played them probably even. They played them early. They probably outplayed them.
They made some plays.
And they hit shot plays.
Yeah, the shot plays.
They hit shot plays.
You gotta hit those.
Correct.
You got to hit those against Georgia.
So I think though, like if I'm saying like, okay, what does this look like? It's Stockton's first road start. And
it's going to be loud.
Congratulations. Enjoy. Maybe he's a little whoopsie-daisy. And
they're going to try to establish the run. I think you...
So I keep wondering, you know, they like their receivers. We've not seen...
Look how much they're running the ball.
I was going to say, we've not seen any proof.
Yeah.
But what if it's football brain guy?
They're just saving it for...
Correct.
Yeah.
I oftentimes think we act like that happens at a higher frequency than
it
does.
It actually does.
I can kind of buy it with them because they knew they had a 2-week preseason.
I would buy it more if we were more confident in Gunnar Stockton.
I think that's also fair to say.
But it could be very well them protecting him as well.
They were able to run it in the first half last year.
Yeah.
They being Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I think Beck played his best game last year against Georgia or against Tennessee. And so where you could say is like, hey, man, that was a 14-point game?
And Aguilar's going to have to be able to run, too.
Correct, but there's a case to be made that Aguilar right now is playing as well as Nico did in November.
Yeah.
Now, I also think this is true. He has never seen what he's going to see.
Mm-mm.
When did he?
He played Tennessee.
Was it Clemson?
He played. I think he did play Clemson. He's played a couple big schools when his numbers weren't great.
No,
numbers weren't great at
their
all.
The team wasn't great,
but he didn't have as much talent as he'll have around him. So it's kind of a tough thing to weigh.
I don't know. I guess I will be happy to congratulate every Tennessee fan Saturday night if I'm wrong. It's very tough for me to see like why I've not seen enough that I can go this year's different.
And I say it like this with Georgia, how do you win on the road in the SEC?
Run and play defense.
And what do we know right now that Georgia can do without a doubt?
I guess
run the ball, they play defense.
I guess the argument against could also be they have not settled on an offensive line rotation.
Yep.
Like they've been shuffling guys in and out. And they were not exactly blowing Austin Peay off the ball.
Yeah.
I still, though, I've seen Kirby Smart teams just not take those games seriously. We get to this game, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, the Texas game last year, it's like everybody, like, thought they were dead. And then, you, like, mm-hmm. right off the bat, you're like, oh, my God, Texas is in hell.
Yeah.
To Michael, to your point, I found the game last season. It was week 2 in Clemson for Aguilar.
Uh-huh.
18 of 41 for 214, mm-hmm. a touchdown, took one sack.
Mm.
So.
No picks.
No picks.
What was his rushing stats?
Oh, 2 for negative 3.
Ah, yeah, see?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly a
So I'm going to say one
bit.
Time he got sacked and the other time he maybe gained.
Probably gained a few yards.
All right, then.
Yeah, it was a 4-yard gain on that. That was his long.
So Apps, his sophomore year, Apps P5 game was, or P4 game was Carolina, and that was, remember that drunk, remember that week two, North Carolina went to App State, that game, just like zero, zero defense period.
Yeah.
ECU, Wyoming, ULM. I don't think Clemson's defense is Georgia's defense. I think Clemson's defense is good.
That defensive line.
Maybe, but to me, the thing that stands out about Georgia's defense, like we were talking about with the Packers, their linebackers are so fast.
Yeah, the athleticism is off the charts. It's off the charts.
All right, so now we've got the other big games of the weekend.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones in the SEC.
I think this is, I understand that this is very dumb, but I'm just trying to be completely transparent. There is no football evidence that suggests I believe Florida can go to Baton Rouge and win. But somehow I can't out of my brain go, this series is always dumb. Like weird things always happen.
You get the ball bouncing off
shoes right are flying.
The
shoes like, flying. Yeah. Like, Tebow's crying. It's this series is just
5 fourth down conversions.
Yeah, like, it's like, this game never makes sense. There's something in my head that's like, it would be so perfect if Florida turns around right after losing to USF, Napier's fired, and then all of a sudden here we are on Monday. It's like, how did they win?
Yeah.
Lagway throws like 350 yards, just goes absolutely crazy.
I want to feel like this is a easy one for LSU, but that offensive line is not there yet. And they did a good job of protecting that offensive line against Clemson in that game, but they couldn't move La Tech. They couldn't run the ball. They could not run the ball against La Tech. And it's like, whoo. And Nussmeier, with all the hype and everything, he missed some throws.
He did. I also think, though, his Clemson game was the first game I was like, I think he might be a little different. Because I've always been skeptical.
Okay.
The Clemson game.
Thought it was really good.
He played. He didn't make any bad decisions, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it came time, like in the fourth quarter, it was like late in the second half, when it was like, hey, man, sometimes you're just going to have to make a throw here or there.
Yeah.
He started, like the Barry and Brown that didn't count, like that was a dime. He had like a deep crossing route that was a dime.
Yeah.
Like ironically, LSU's
always going to have the targets.
The easiest pass he had was the touchdown, because it was just like a one-on-one.
Just throw it up.
All right, the 6'6 guy's on a 5'10 corner. It's like, all right, here you go. Here's a layup.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one.
He might not play too, Tre'Davious Green.
There's just something weird about this game.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. Are we really willing to say, like, plant our flag down, like, this LSU's different?
The defense is.
They definitely are on that, but
the defense is. It's nasty. Blake Baker is.
He's got dudes finally.
He's legit.
But also I think you have to wonder, it's like, are they as nasty as we think, or maybe Clemson sucks on offense? I think it was like 1.7 against Troy.
Yeah. Per carry. It wasn't.
Like they can't run the ball on Troy.
Yeah. I think it's always somewhere in the middle, but LSU's defense was really good against La Tech. I mean, it's La Tech, but they were just as impressive. They got guys flying around. Like you said, they got the horses now, and I've always thought, even going back to Mizzou, Blake Baker is a very creative play caller defensively. He's really good.
Klubnik, and I do also like how he basically is like, when all else fails, he's kind of got some Grantham in him. Like, if it's late and we need to play, they can't stop a blitz.
And the thing that LSU and their losses, and even when they beat South Carolina in that weird game last season, running quarterbacks destroyed LSU last year.
Yes, they did.
And DJ Lagway.
Do we think that's still the case, though?
Harold Perkins is back, so that's
all right. And then the other big one, because we'll get to Georgia's big game this weekend, and whether or not Lane is telling the truth.
Ole Miss,
he's definitely telling his story, because he doesn't know how not to.
I don't even know if he's like storytelling. I just think like his default setting's troll.
It is.
Like he doesn't know.
He's the ultimate troll.
Like he doesn't know how to like play it straight. Like he just has to troll.
He lives by the motto of this show.
Correct.
Lives by it.
I cannot think of a big game that I can't wait to watch, that I truly have no idea what to expect, like this A&M Notre Dame game. You can tell me every result from A&M wins by 14 or more to it being a field goal game either way to Notre Dame winning by 14 or more. Any outcome you tell me, I can buy, but I have no idea what to think about this game because I don't really know if either team is anything.
This is going to be some nasty football unless you love nasty football. I think it's going to be.
So you think are we sniffing at Ohio State, Texas?
Yeah, possibly.
Because to me, the thing that was interesting about week one, Ohio State, Texas was boring. Clemson and LSU, and I can't explain why, even though there was only, 10 more points?
Yeah.
That was not a boring game. Ohio State and Texas was boring.
Was boring.
So you think we're more, which boring are we going?
I'm looking at boring like somebody please score boring. Because I think it could be sloppy.
We're watching paint dry?
Yeah. I mean, because going back to your point with LSU and Clemson, you felt more confident in the quarterbacks.
Someone was going to hit a pass.
Yeah, exactly. And in this game, you don't know when someone's going to hit a pass. They might hit a run,
or will they throw one?
Yeah,
I don't. I think that's what it is. It's like,
give it to Jeremiah Love 30 times, man.
I've never seen a situation like this. So Marcel Reed started at NBA as a freshman.
Yeah,
I think every year I've seen Marcel progressing. Like every single year after that, I've come away less impressed. When he was a freshman at NBA, I was like, oh my God, this guy's going to change football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was the most polished, 15-year-old I'd ever seen. Perfect footwork, pretty throwing motion. Next year, in fairness to him, I think the next year was the COVID year, and nobody was really all that, nobody was sharp. Then junior year, he started, whoopsie-daisying it a lot.
Yeah, he got the stars by his name now. Yeah.
And then, at A&M, he had the big game against LSU, but
that was
also
his breakout. Yeah.
Well, that also felt like LSU spent the whole week preparing for Wegman. Wegman gets hurt. Marcel, running quarterback, kills
running
him.
Quarterback.
And then, hey, twice they took a shot, and he hit a wide open shot. But it's I don't know if I trust him. I thought CJ Carr looked good in his opener, but at the same time, it's he still made.
He's more talent than.
Still made a couple of throws where you're like, that didn't help.
Yeah.
He had the bad interception, but I did think the moment didn't look too big for him. But it's I have no idea what to think in this game.
Me either. This is one of those games, it's a turnover here, a turnover there is going to be massive. It might be a game where a 65-yard punt is
good old flip it of the field.
Yeah. it might be that type of game.
I do think there's a chance for our dad's football to be back this year. Some sexy punts. Because I just think defenses are so ahead of offenses.
Look at the quarterbacks. There's no runaway quarter. It changes almost every week. Oh, this is the favorite. Oh, this is the guy.
I think it's not only it's quarterbacks, but also it's I just don't think there are good offensive lines. Because everybody's having to fill. It feels like everybody's trying to go and build a line through the portal.
Mm.
And it's they haven't gelled. And then you go up against these freakish defensive linemen. It's they're just getting beat.
Yeah.
And so it just feels
that's a good point, too.
It feels football and early Saban. It feels like we're back into the 08 through 2012 Ooh, era.
Yeah. The LSU Alabama 2011.
Oh, game of the century. It's whoa, I took two naps in that one? Yeah. That was great. It was awesome. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins the program. We'll get his thoughts on a big weekend. Next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Skip the gym, not the workout. With Hydro, you get a full body workout in just 20 minutes, hitting 86% of your muscles in one smooth, low-impact motion. And now there's a new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet. Arc introduces Hydro Metrics, tracking your power, endurance, and precision every time you row, so you can actually see your progress. Go to Hydro.com and use code FIT to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc. That's HY. IDROW.com. Code FIT.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Please now to welcome Blake Topmeyer to the program. He, of course, is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you get your podcast. You can also follow him on X at @BTopmeyer. Blake, why should I believe that this year it could be different in Knoxville when Georgia comes to town?
I'm not convinced you should, and I've asked myself that same question over and over because, you know, you try to find ways that the trend could end, the trend being 8 straight for Georgia, the trend being Kirby Smart is the one coach Josh Heupel hasn't solved in the SEC and hasn't come close to solving. I mean, you have to go back to the Jeremy Pruitt era to find the last time Tennessee scored more than 17 points in a game against Georgia. And so, like you, I've tried to find a way to sort of talk myself into this could be the year. And I mean, you can point to Neyland Stadium, sure. That's a factor, absolutely. Since the start of the 2022 season, Georgia is the only team that has beaten Tennessee inside Neyland. So if there's an X factor for the Vols, it's the fact that it's a home game. It's been a really tough venue on opponents the last few years. But overall, I'm struggling to talk myself into a way in which, you know, Tennessee's not actually the underdog in this game.
I think this was where I netted out, because I was talking about it with Cobb yesterday, because we all three see the game the same way, so maybe that's why we're going to be wrong. I think what you could point to was, I felt like in the first half last year in Athens, that's the best that they've run the ball on Georgia, and if they could do it for two halves, maybe it's that way, because they were able to really run it in the first half. And then I think maybe the other X factor is, for all the Georgia criticism, and you know, we weren't sorry to see him go with Carson Beck, that was probably Carson's best game last year. And Gunnar Stockton, I don't think, is the same player that Carson Beck is. And maybe you could talk yourself into, all right, you flip the venue and they don't have as good of a quarterback. If they're able to find sustained running success, like, they can be in it. Like, I think that would be the formula.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on something with Stockton, too. Like, the guy's been around the program for a while, sure. But in terms of a true road test, this is his first career true road start, right? He had the neutral sider in the playoff, and that didn't go particularly well, although there was a lot of factors in that. He wasn't the only thing that didn't go well for Georgia in that game. But then, you know, then he has the two starts against Cupcakes to start this season. And so I'm remembering correctly, right? Like, this is Gunnar Stockton's first career road start. So if things go really badly for him, maybe Tennessee finds a way here. I don't know that I see Tennessee solving Georgia's defense. I mean, they've had several cracks at it, and they've had better offenses than this one be unable to solve Georgia. Now, you could look at that the other way and say Georgia's had better defenses than this one. Sure, they've had some absolutely elite units. I think this is a good unit. I'm not sure yet whether it's elite, but it's pretty good. But, you know, I don't know that this is the Tennessee offense that's going to solve Kirby, but the flip side of that is, what if Gunnar Stockton gets out there in front of 100,000 plus who are trying to make his life absolutely miserable and lays a clunker, and, you know, Tennessee finds itself in a game that's going to be one in the 20s. And that I think is maybe the scenario in which they pull off the upset.
And that was kind of the Alabama game last year.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of the Alabama game last year. It's you're right about the run game. It's hard to get a read on either of these teams based on the sample size.
Totally agree.
You know, Syracuse is going to be a bad team. I think neither one of us thought a ton of Syracuse coming into the season, then seeing them, you know, being pushed to the wire by UConn. I think Syracuse is going to be a bad team. So that doesn't tell us
they
a
had
lot.
To escape. Like they put together a drive. Like they should have lost the game outright.
Right. Right. So that week one game, it didn't look like a defining win at the time anyway for Tennessee. It doesn't look like much at this point. So don't know a ton about either team, but it's a test for Joey Aguilar too, right? I mean, he's much more experienced as a college starter than what Gunnar Stockton is, but he's never played in a game like this. And he deserves all the flowers that he's getting at this point. I mean, the guy's been one of the best stories in, you know, the first few weeks of the college football season, deserves all the praise he's getting. He was in a pickle at UCLA. I don't want to say they treated him unfairly because this is a business and everybody's out here to win games. And if UCLA thought they could win more with Nico, great, whatever, that's fine. But
he's still a millionaire.
He's still a millionaire. Yeah, I'm not going to shed any tears for him. But he absolutely made the best of an unfortunate situation there, and he came out on the better side of it. But getting back to the football, like he's not faced a moment like this. And so for both quarterbacks, I do, you know, oftentimes we kind of have this tendency to oversimplify it to the quarterbacks, but they do, you know, hold outsized sway. And I think that is one of the defining storylines in this game is, you know, in Gunnar Stockton's first career true road start and in the biggest moment of Joey Aguilar's career, which one sort of rises to the moment and does one of the two, you know, wilt a little bit under the pressure, under the circumstances.
I know you were covering Michigan and Oklahoma last week. Were you watching in the press box when Florida just said, here, please, South Florida, just put us out of our misery?
I did. Yeah, I had several games on I was monitoring, and it was about the fourth quarter of that Florida game where, I mean, you know how it is watching these upset bids. You're like, all right, let's wait till it gets the fourth quarter, see if this thing gets real. But yeah, when that thing got real in the fourth quarter, that was sort of the game that kind of took over the press box leading up to the kickoff there in Oklahoma. And yeah, I watched it unravel on the Gators. And that was, you know, it's been written about, I've written about it, others have written about it. You know, it's the same old story with Billy Napier is a lot of the hallmarks of a Billy Napier loss were found in that South Florida loss. And I don't want to take anything away from the Bulls. I think they're one of the best G5 teams in the country. You know, we saw that against Boise in week one, a statement victory there, and went on the road in a hostile swamp and got it done there. But let's also be honest, Florida factored into that outcome too by just a series of gaffes.
I still cannot believe when Thursday night, one of the most high-profile sporting events that we'll have all year, you have a player spit and get ejected. You know every single coach had a meeting on Friday and Saturday. Don't do this. Teach tape, if you will. And then it happens again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of the power of suggestion. You know, I think in one way it's, you see something like stupid like that happen and it's like, well, how could someone else do it? You know, unfortunately that can also easily go the other way though, too. You see something like that happen and gets lodged in your brain and it comes out in the form of a loogie a couple days later because, you know, whether that influenced or not, I don't know, but you can see the other direction too of, hey, I just saw this happen in the big leagues a couple days ago. I'm not in control of my actions right now. Next thing you know, a loogie comes flying. And, you know, would that game have ended differently if not for the loogie? I don't know, but I wrote about this week, you know, in a lot of fired coaches' tenures, there becomes that defining moment that it's like, this is the moment that coaching tenure ended. You know, they weren't fired on that particular day, but this is the moment it ended. And you go back and look at Florida's coaches, you know, for Will Muschamp, it was already going downhill, but when he lost to Georgia Southern, who at the time was in the FCS, on a day in which Georgia Southern did not complete a single stinking pass,
yes,
like it was all over for Will Muschamp. For Jim McElwain, you had the unsubstantiated death threats that he referenced, and you had Sharkgate before that. But I really think you can overcome Sharkgate because it wasn't him, right? It was a weird story. He didn't handle it well. you know, he should have just like laughed it off. He didn't handle it well, but then it continued to go further downhill, and then he referenced the unsubstantiated death threats that he allegedly received, but there was never any proof of them that surfaced. So that was sort of the inflection point, that, you know, kind of the final straw for Jim McElwain. And then for Dan Mullen, you know, the firing occurred the year later, but it seemed like the moment that shoe got tossed in the air by Marco Wilson on a foggy night in the swamp, that was the beginning of the end for Dan Mullen. And
well, remember, didn't he rest half the team? Remember, LSU was like a walking corpse at that point. Like, he rested Pitts, like he was resting starters, and then, you know, then shoot, yeah, right. Then the Marco Wilson throws the shoe.
The famous odd job shoe throw. And so, and we can look at these others. These things happen in other situations too. I'm just pointing out of Florida. But so for Billy Napier, he's had some embarrassing moments. He's had some moments where he's gotten off the mat. But I do think for him, the night he lost to an in-state G5 opponent on a night a loogie flew through the air, that is going to be the straw that, you know, I think kind of breaks the back for Billy Napier. I don't see him surviving this season. I mean, I think he's going to get a chance here the next few weeks, but it's hard for me to see a way in which he wriggles out of this one.
It's weird with this game because there's not a lot you can point to that for, like, if you're saying, like, why do you like Florida in this game? It's almost just like, well, the sport's dumb, and wouldn't it be hilarious? Like, you lose to South Florida, they turn around, go to Baton Rouge, and win at night. But there is, like, something about this game where it's like, where I'm having trouble seeing how Tennessee wins, even the fact that they're at home and we don't even know what this Georgia team is. The fact that, like, I'm more open to the idea of Florida winning this game, like, I just feel like it speaks to the just absurd nature of this series.
I totally agree. Like, I feel like this is the quote-unquote trap game for LSU, and yet there's no evidence why it should be. I mean, you're at Tiger Stadium at night, which is supposedly the most daunting place to step into in college football. Now, it wasn't for Alabama last year, but we've seen it time and again. You know, Tiger Stadium is a tough venue at night, and Florida looked awful last week, and so. But I'm the same way as you. Like, if we're looking for the upset pick this week, I'm kind of tempted by the Florida situation. And I think it's two things. One, I think it's the absurdity of the sport that we've come to almost expect at this point, particularly after last season was really wild and woolly. But the other thing I think, too, is, like, you know, LSU didn't look great last week against Louisiana Tech. I don't really know if that should matter. But I think that sort of lingers in our brain a little bit. And also, we've seen the Gators get off the mat for Billy Napier before. I mean, that guy looked cooked last year.
Yes.
And they win four straight at the end of the season. Now, Florida State was a terrible team, yes. But they beat Ole Miss when Ole Miss had everything on the line and was playing really, really stinking well at that point in the season. You know, a result that just sort of defied logic, and also beat LSU. In the swamp, an LSU team that I didn't think was great, but I thought was a better team than Florida. And so we've seen the Gators get off the mat for Billy Napier before. So I think that lingers in the brain a little bit of as well of, like, does this guy have one more final surge in him? Can this team get up for him one more time? I don't believe it. I think the ship has sailed, but there is that sort of lingering doubt in the brain, I think. I think sort of those factors are kind of where it comes from.
Is this Ole Miss quarterback thing weird to you?
A little bit, yeah. I think so. I think it's a little bit weird. I agree.
I was wondering this. How seriously do you think the league takes the injury report? Because on the one hand, Lane is like a pretty, I'm not saying he's the only one, but he's kind of one of the biggest offenders of not taking it seriously. I mean, he would call reporters on game day and say this guy's going to play, knowing full well he wasn't going to play. Like, he just views it as a joke. But all the people in Oxford were saying, if the game were played yesterday, Austin Simmons isn't going to play. Yet on Wednesday, when they have to file the official injury report, he's listed as probable. Like, I think it's Lane trolling, But, like, I think that's really – like, if he ends up not playing on Saturday and the line suggests that Vegas isn't quite sure that he's playing.
Correct, yeah. It seems like some skeptical there, yeah.
If he doesn't play, like, I can see where the league now has to, like, actually do something beyond just fining him.
But it's so difficult because it's like probable doesn't mean he's definitely going to play. And one man's definition of probable is another man's definition of questionable. And one man's definition of questionable is another one's doubtful. Like that's sort of the problem with these terms that are thrown around. And, you know, what is how willing are we to penalize someone for saying probable when it was really maybe questionable at best? I don't know. It's such a gray area, you know, and I don't know that there's a real surefire way to fix that, right? Because what if a guy actually was probable, like, you know, in the truest sense of the word, you thought he was going to play and then he just can't get there and he can't play. And yet there's going to be some sort of punitive action then come down from the league because a guy that you legitimately did think was going, I don't know. It's such a gray area to operate in. And that's why, like, these injury reports, like, in theory, I think that's all well and good. But when you're dealing with the health of, I know the sport's very professionalized now and it's a pay to play model. But when you're dealing about health situations with what are still college athletes, it is a weird gray area, I think, to operate in of starting to get, like, overly punitive to a coach listing a guy as probable and then he doesn't play.
Yeah, I think also adding to the gray area, I'm unclear, how serious do you think the league actually takes it? Because that's I really struggle because it's unclear to me.
I don't think they take it all that seriously. I think it's like one of those things you have to do at this point with the gambling in the sport the way that it is, not in the sport, I mean, in society, really. I think these injury reports are something you have to do. How seriously does the league take any of this, you know, probable versus, I don't think that seriously. Like, I don't think as seriously as they were starting to take the faking of the injuries during live game action.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they actually did something about it.
Right, they did something about it, and I think they were thinking about doing how to do something about it for a while before they did something about it. So I gotta give them credit.
I know we love to rip on leadership. It's kind of worked.
It has, and I think it was like the best solution possible. You know, I think it was one of these things like where if a guy is legitimately injured and gets legitimately injured in bad timing, well, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is, you know, and it does offer a deterrence to just having repeated fake injuries. So I think given the situation, they came up with the best solution possible. As far as the injury reports, yeah, I don't. I guess my short answer would be, I don't think it's a top concern.
How serious do you take Arkansas's chances in this?
Not insignificant, because it's not just what's going on at Ole Miss. It's Arkansas looks good and Talen Green looks good, and I know
it's year two of Bobby Petrino.
And that's another coach. That, I mean, my goodness, how many times have we not written the coaching tenure obituary for Sam Pittman, and he's still here, and Bobby's getting better as his OC, and we can speculate wildly if we want that means that he will be the coach the day that Sam Pittman is not. Well, I don't know. It's kind of working right now the way it is of Bobby PB just being the OC, Talen Green looking pretty darn good as a quarterback, and Sam Pittman just marching on as the head coach. And it comes with the caveat that all these week three games come with when teams haven't played anybody for 2 weeks of they ain't played nobody yet.
Yep.
So that's true. They ain't played nobody yet. And also they've looked pretty good not playing nobody. So now they're playing somebody. These games at times in the past have been pretty darn entertaining. Not always, but oftentimes Ole Miss and Arkansas.
Oh, this game lives in the liquor cabinet. This game just it's usually like, you know, sometimes you'll have this game, it'll start off kind of like a 7-point first quarter, and then everybody just looks around like shots, and it just gets like, all right, here 52-50. Like, here we go.
Yeah, excellently said. This game lives in the liquor cabinet. That is a beautiful way for putting Arkansas Ole Miss. So, yeah, this is one. and as you know, I look at all the lines. I follow the gambling action. I don't put my money where my mouth is. But if I did, I'd be staying as far away as possible. I'd be three time zones away from this game. I wouldn't want anything to do with it. I'm giving Arkansas a chance to be sure.
Well, because like that's the other aspect. Because I got asked this, and it's like I have no idea if Trinidad Chambliss plays, can Ole Miss win? It's like, I don't know. They ran the football on Kentucky for one series. I have no idea. My instinct says if that's who's playing with Taylen Green on the other side, you're going to have to score and you're probably going to have to throw. So it's like, I have no idea. I'm with you. Like, this is like a, I guess if you want to live bet it, by all means have at it. But it's like, I just cannot actually bring myself to like put money on this game.
And this is why I think this week is really sneaky.
Oh,
sneaky
the
good.
Night slate is so good.
Is Vanderbilt Virginia Tech at night? When is that?
That's the problem. It's like the SEC. So like we're gonna have three big games. We have A&M and Notre Dame on NBC at 6:30. At 6, you have Ole Miss and Arkansas. I believe that's ESPN. 6:30 ABC is LSU Florida, and then 6:45 SEC Network is South Carolina and Vandy. And I swear to God, no irony, that might be the game I'm most excited for.
Yeah. Sorry, I said Virginia Tech because that's a common opponent, but you knew what I meant. But yeah, and that's the undercard game. But the point being,
they've put that on SEC Network in the middle of like those other games.
Yeah, that's the undercard game, and it's so stinking interesting because we're getting big playoff ramifications in these games. I mean, Ole Miss, like, you know, they're seen as sort of a sleeper playoff contender. South Carolina, absolutely seen as a sleeper playoff contender. But Vanderbilt, you know, against the common opponent, Virginia Tech, looked better.
Vanderbilt's got some explosion on offense.
Yes, we're sitting here talking about how Ole Miss ought to be a little concerned about Arkansas coming to town, and these aren't even the headline games.
No,
on the Saturday, with you know a monumental game between Notre Dame and Texas A&M.
We haven't even talked about it.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that one. And so, yeah, I think this is the type of week that I think coming into the season there would have been a couple games circled, right? Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. Notre Dame would have been circled from the jump coming into the season.
And I think we would have been looking forward to Florida and LSU because we thought it would have been two undefeated teams.
Right, yeah. Florida, LSU for other reasons than the reasons we're looking at it now of, like, is this going to be Billy Napier's swan song? But, yeah, we're not thinking about probably Ole Miss, Arkansas, because I think coming in the year we're like, yeah, Arkansas is probably going to be not great to bad. You know, maybe South Carolina, Vanderbilt's not on the radar. You're wondering, was Vanderbilt a flash in the pan last year? But no, you add those games and some others. You know, week one got a ton of fanfare, and there were some monumental matchups in week one, to be sure. But I don't know. This one might end up being, you know, more memorable of a weekend than week one was.
I'm already trying to plan. My daughter's bedtime is usually like that bath bedtime, which AKA is war. If you ever get into that with your wife, like it is just like you're just trying to survive. But it's usually like in between like 7:15 and 7:45. And I'm just like, can we push it to make sure we get to halftime? And then like we use halftime because I was like, there's so many games I want to watch. And like that Texas A&M Notre Dame game, I have, like, I can have conviction. I'm fine being wrong. You could literally tell me any result in this game and I think I buy it. You can tell me A&M wins by 14 or more, I'm cool. You can tell me Notre Dame wins by 14 or more, I can see how that happens. You can tell me this is a hell of a football game, I have no idea what to expect from this one.
Yeah, I agree. And just the long-term implications of this. I mean, my goodness, what would the committee do if Notre Dame starts 0-2 and then runs the table and goes 10-2? And I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but that is not an unreasonable possibility when you look at the Notre Dame schedule that they couldn't lose this one, start 0-2, and then rally. But what does that really mean? I mean, you look at the rest of Notre Dame's season. I think Southern Cal is actually going to be pretty good. Dangerous words to say, I realize, but I think Southern Cal could be pretty spicy this year. But other than the Southern Cal game, it's like, what signature moments would Notre Dame have after this game? You know, they lose in a close one to Miami, but
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.